Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. We have Ryan from How It Works Speaker Group in Columbus, New Jersey.
Great way to start. What is up? My name is Ryan Orlowski, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
Grateful to be here, grateful for my relationship with God. And those of you expecting to see Allison from Ringo's, I'm what is called a pinch hitter. I received a phone call yesterday and was asked if I was free to come out tonight. I don't know Allison, but I'm going to be way better than her. All kidding aside, I know today I'm no better or no worse than anybody here. Just another bozo on the bus. And my job is very simple, to tell the truth, which was difficult for a long time, even in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, what I used to be like, what happened to what I'm like today. And I was taught to suit up, show up, and dress up. And to show Alcoholics Anonymous the respect that it deserves. And I have a little prayer that I use before I do anything for AA. And I did say it if anybody's worried. And it goes like something like this. I say, God, use me as you see fit. Please, not as I see fit. And not as this group sees fit. But as you see fit. And you and I both know that my ego would like to carry a decent message. But if I have to look like a prick, excuse my language, or a jackass to directly help somebody here tonight, that's okay with me. But if you could leave me with just like a shred of human dignity, I would really appreciate it. And I sure hope you got this, God, because I don't. That's how I end. And very grateful to be here. I drove through a whole bunch of rain on the ride here. It was coming down. Most cars had pulled off the side of the road, but I just kept going. And I got to this part where it was really dark and there was a little opening in the clouds and the sun came out. And I didn't have my sunglasses on because it was raining. So now I can't see because of the rain and I can't see because of the sun. And I started looking for the rainbow. That's what I did. I'm like, I know it's got to be here somewhere. Swerving even more, looking for the rainbow. But I did get here, and again, I want to thank Dave for the call and the group for having me. My sobriety date is December 20th, 2008, so I'm brand new. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and there have been like a boatload of people, like either, I guess, naive enough or gullible enough to ask me what I've done. And sitting down with them and sharing my experience. What's worked for me up till today, and as important for me, what hasn't worked for me in AA is the highlight of my life. And again, just so very grateful to be here. My own group is the Columbus How It Works Speaker Group. We meet Friday nights in Columbus, New Jersey. It's the Trenton area. It's about 1:15 from here. It's a meeting just like this. One speaker, they have the full hour. It's a room with a consistent message of hope. Because again, my experience up till today, AA hasn't been about what a scumbag I used to be or things I used to do. Or, ways I used to act, or not even about alcohol, but AA has been about hope and about God, my experience up till today. I got sober down in Barnegat at the There's a Solution group on Saturday night and relocated a few months after that, and we opened up a sober house. And we're hitting a bunch of these meetings in the Trenton area, a lot of open discussion meetings, and basically what was happening is people weren't saying what I wanted them to say. So I would get all messed up. There's definitely something wrong with me. And instead of bitching and moaning and whining, we moved our feet and found a church, started a group. And it's where my heart is. Now, that same type of temporary relief I used to get from pulling into the parking lot of a liquor store, or pulling into the streets of Northeast Philly, you know, is the same type of temporary relief I get when I pull in that parking lot Friday night. And it's men and women enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous, and enthusiastic about life, because AA meetings are an hour. So what are you doing with the rest of your day? And there's a lot of joy in the room, a lot of belly laughter, and I have a blast in Alcoholics Anonymous. A freaking blast. But it wasn't always that way. So let's see, now that all that jazz is out of the way, I was raised on a 200-year-old farmhouse, similar area to here, cornfields all over the place, farmland everywhere. Definitely very cliche. Everything I needed, most of what I wanted. No parents, are married 30 years. I have one sister. No immediate alcoholism in the family. Family dinners every night at the table. Church on Sunday. Family vacations every year. Parents are at all my sporting events. No immediate alcoholism in my immediate family. And I was taught morals and values and manners and the whole nine. And something I can remember from a very early age, way before I picked up a drink, is that I had this very, very racy head. Extremely racy. Just chaos. You know, people talk about the committee up there. Like, I would give anything for just one committee to be up there. And, like pre-fighting fights. You know, like if I see this person tomorrow, I might say this, and they might say this back. You know, or like re-fighting fights. Like if I had only said that. You know, I might wear these clothes to school tomorrow and see her, and she might say this, and I might say this, and where I'm going to be in 20 years, things that happened 6 months ago, and wondering if you're thinking about me right now. Definitely wondering if you're wondering if I'm thinking about you. Always going on upstairs, and an emptiness inside, a ball of anxiety, and not in my stomach, whatever you want to call it. The best way I've heard it described is a hole in my soul, and I knew exactly what that guy was talking about. It was like there was a handbook on life given out in like second grade, and I was absent that day. That was my perception at the time. That was what I thought, and that was how I felt. Like if the mothership had like landed and was like, "Ryan, come home," I would have been like, "Where have you been? Like this is starting to make sense." And just always apart from, never felt like I fit in. Uncomfortable walking around this earth. And as I grew up, I found a lot of temporary fixes for it. I found a lot of temporary things that worked. Acting out class attention, class clown type thing, started to spend more time in the principal's office than in the classroom. Second, third grade, seeing the school psychiatrist and psychologist, all that stuff. That attention worked for a little bit. Success on the athletically on the field worked for a little bit. As I grew up, females definitely worked. Money definitely worked, a new job, a new car, whatever it may be. I found a lot of temporary fixes. But that new car and that new job and that new girl, after 3 months, wasn't new anymore. And then I was left with me again. And I'm grateful I found alcohol, because I don't know if I'd be here if I didn't. The way I was walking around this world. So I took my first drink at 16. I went to Europe for 5 weeks. I went 3 weeks with my high school for an exchange program and 2 weeks by myself. I was in Austria, Germany, Hungary, Italy, and the Czech Republic. And it was an unbelievable experience. I would go back yesterday if I could. I'm grateful I took very many pictures because I really don't remember most of the trip. But, you know, and up until this point, we got the DARE programs and, you know, all that nonsense in the health classes where, like, you know, they tell you, like, you got to stay away from this and, you know, drugs and alcohol are bad. And, you know, if you do this, you can stay up all night. And if you put this under your tongue, you're going to see stuff. And, like, I mean, I don't know, looking in hindsight, like, I think they were trying to scare me, but, like, I wanted to sign up and ask, like, if they had a catalog or something. Like, that's where I was at. So, you know, and every decision up to this point that I made was based on fear of what you would think of me if I did do something, or fear of what you would think of me if I did not do it. You had to like me. That was the most important thing to me. So I would tell you what you wanted to hear and adapt to who you were. You know, if you liked rap, I liked rap. If you liked country music, I liked country music. You know, it was whatever, so that you would like me. That was just really, really important. Because I felt like a scumbag. I felt less than. If you really knew who I was, you wouldn't like me. So I had to put on this little alternate persona. So Europe. I take the one thing I remember about Europe. We walked into what was called Der Spinner, which means the spider in English. And that was like at 16, like pretty cool, I thought. I was going in this place called the Spider. I'd never drank before. I remember being scared, wondering if I had the right clothes on to drink, wondering if I was going to act right when I drank. And I'd never done this before. And I was 16, and the drinking age was 16. I had a Penn State football hat on, and people knew I was not from around the corner. So there was a lot of immediate attention on me, which was amazing. I loved that. And it was probably 2 or 3 drinks in, or 10 or 15 minutes later, very irrelevant, the number or the time period. But, you know, a sense of ease and comfort came over me at once. And that hay that I was talking about was quiet. Just shut up. And the hole was filled up. I had my first spiritual experience at 16 with alcohol. It was absolutely unbelievable. I remember getting pissed off that I hadn't found it sooner. And wanted to do that as much as possible. And I blacked the first night I drank, I blacked out. I woke up in a pool of my own vomit. The Austrians told me about this. The next one, they loved me, by the way, which was really great at the time. And these are consequences that I'm like so willing to pay. You know, like if I have to forget what happened the night before and throw up on myself to shut my head up, I'm game. I'll do that every single time if I have to. And that's what I did. That's what I did. I came back to the States. You know, looking back in hindsight, I made a decision that night to turn my life and my will over to the care of booze as I understood it. And, you know, didn't know it at the time. And I'm a weekend warrior. And with respect to the traditions and the founders, I'm going to stick to alcohol. Just know that drugs are a huge part of my story. I was the whole full-blown junkie. The progression, you can imagine anything. Opiates brought me in here, and I'm very grateful for it, because I think it got me in here a little bit before my time. And it's all byproducts of my alcoholism for me. So I'm getting into these other, you know, powder forms of alcohol. And it's shutting the head and it's filling the hole. So it's game on. And I was very successful. Excuse me. This part of the story, I have to tell the truth, right? So, like, I remember he used to say, like, I just want to let people know that I didn't come from a broken home, yada, yada, yada. But I do say this definitely to relive the glory days a little bit. Again, no immediate alcoholism. I wasn't beaten. No molestation. Anything like that. My family. I was National Honor Society in high school. I graduated 16th in my class out of like 250. Never studied one day in my life. I was very good at like minimal effort for like maximum return. And I was captain of my high school football team and captain of my high school baseball team. I was prom king at my high school. I'm still trying to figure that one out. I won Mr. Northern, which was like a male beauty pageant. I like that. I won a talent show twice. The first year we sang Tell Him by Celine Dion and Barbara Streisand. I was Celine. And then next year we did Blues Brothers. Smoke Machine. It was great. I was actually sold for the most money at a female auction, which was a fundraiser for the wrestling team. So like high school for me was like really good. It was great. You know, I fit in with the jocks, with the smart kids because of NHS, with the ladies because of the success on the field. Again, still chameleoning myself. You know, and because when I first came into AA, I heard people say that, you know, their parents were alcoholic. They didn't do well in school. They didn't do good on the field. And I immediately disqualified myself from being alcoholic. And I know today that all that stuff has absolutely nothing to do with what makes me alcoholic. But I didn't know that for a while. So I was a very competitive soccer player. I played up and down the East Coast of the U.S. About eighth grade, I was convinced to try to switch and kick a football. Like a long story short, I received a full scholarship to kick at a Division II school in Springfield, Massachusetts called American International College. I received $17,000 for football and $7,000 for academics. I was completely paid for. Books were included. Everything. And I go away to school, and I have like very little discipline as it is. And my mommy's not waking me up to get me to class. And I got the keg in the closet and the girl in the closet. And I had a ride. It says in Bill's story. You know, and I'm already living in this delusion, you know, where the abnormal becomes the normal. You know, the inability to differentiate the true from the false. And my lifestyle becomes the only normal one. And I thought everybody drank and used like I did. And if you didn't, then I was a big time taker from the world in general. Like, if you didn't have something that I needed or I could use, I didn't want to hang out with you. And I used people. And so if you didn't have something I needed or wanted and you didn't drink or use like me, then I would go around you or right through you because I didn't care about you. I only cared about me. And that went on for a while. God's grace working in my life before I was well aware of it. I lasted 3 semesters at this school. Somehow. I have no idea how. Like, it got to a point where I would, like, throw up in, like, a garbage can and, like, put it in the closet and, like, shut the door. And, like, I would have, like, bottles of my own urine, like, lined up because I was so messed up I couldn't get out of bed. And, like, if you were to ask me how I was, I would have said, great. I'm great. You know, totally believing it. And it went on like that for a long time. I came back to Jersey, got a job bartending, which if you're active, is at the time I thought, I'm like, why did I go away to college? Like, that was stupid. This is way better. Like the hours, the money, the girls. It was great. You know, there's a lot of, you have a lot of power at that position. People like you. At least if you can like have a civilized conversation with someone. And I'm like in charge of the booze. And I was a mess. At this time, I'm starting to lose other stuff like can't pay for the car, the insurance. I failed to mention, while I was at school, for those 3 semesters, I would get mail, like credit card bills, car insurance, whatever. How many bills can I have when I'm 18 or 19? And I would rip them up and throw them in the garbage. And I really thought, with every fiber of my being, that they would forget about me. That's really where I was. And I'm here to report that they don't. So if there's anybody doing that, please knock it off. It's just so delusional. And so I'm starting to lose, you know, car insurance. I'm getting kicked out of my apartment. And at the time, consequences I'm still willing to pay. You know, as long as I had mommy and daddy to go back to, I was a big time boomeranger. Like, I could manipulate my mother like there was no belief, I mean, beyond belief. It was sickening if I look back now. But she would let me come home, you know. And until I don't have a bed or food in my stomach, I'm not going to change. It's just me. And at the time, consequences, I'm okay paying, you know. So I don't have a car. My buddy will pick me up. You know, so I don't have my own place. You know, I got food and a bed in my mom's house. The fun was up here when I first started drinking, and I had a blast at the beginning. A lot of great times. You know, you hear people say, like, my best day sober is better than my worst day sober is better than my best day drunk. Not me. I had some unbelievable times when I was drinking. And my worst day sober, I'm sitting in my room probably by myself, thinking about me and my bills and my job. And it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. Now I'm awake and aware today, and I can get out of that. But my best days drinking were way better than my worst days sober for me. So I'm all over the place now. Let's see. I'm bartending. Oh yeah, fun's up here. Consequences are down here. It starts to even out somewhere in the middle. And then at the end, I really wasn't having as much fun as I would have liked to have. And the consequences I started paying, I wasn't willing to pay anymore. And, you know, I get to the point where I can't get through an hour of work without putting a certain substance in my body. You know, I'm getting hot and cold sweats, physically aching, physically throwing up at work. You know, I can't do anything. And, you know, I'm roaring through the lives of everything and everyone I'm coming into contact with. You know, hurting the ones who care about me the most. You know, the ones who show me unconditional love since I was little. And I blacked out at a birthday party for me. My mother gave me an ultimatum. Go see this therapist outside of Philadelphia or get kicked out of the house. So I was like, all right. So I go see this woman. She said she would only see me if I went to AA. So I got like bamboozled into AA. And I was like, all right, let's go. And I need a bed and food. So I'll go. And I'm like 6 weeks sober, I think. And I found a loophole in the literature. If there's anybody looking, you'll find it if you look hard enough. It's very clear. It says if you're not sure, then we suggest you go try some controlled drinking. Step over to the nearest bar. It doesn't say go across town. It says the nearest. So I like called my sponsor. I'm like, dude, I'm going to go drink. Thanks for your help. Maybe we can still hang out. He's like, yeah, maybe. Yeah. So you guys know that controlled drinking lasted about 8 minutes. And I drank and used more in that year and a half than I had like in my entire life. It was bad. And I'm bouncing around on couches and getting kicked out everywhere I go. I'm staying on people's couches. I don't even know. You know, like wake up somewhere and like just not leave until they told me I had to go. Like move in without telling them. I mean, I could laugh about it today, but man, I was sick. And at the end of this time, the consequences I started to pay, I was not willing to pay. Those consequences being very simple. Like, I hadn't talked to my mom in about 6 months. She didn't know if I was alive or dead. And I couldn't answer the phone if she called. It was just full of, like, guilt, shame, and remorse of the drunk, junky bum I had become. And I hadn't talked to my sister in probably 3 years this time. And I couldn't have a conversation with anybody, whether it was my mom or whether it was a total stranger. And I couldn't look you in the eye. And these were consequences that really started to get to me. And I had whatever. My eyes were open for the first time in my life that I was killing me and people around me. And I made a decision to go into Alcoholics Anonymous for me, for the first time. Now, I crawled back to my mommy and my daddy on my hands and knees. I was 26. I'm 28. And I know I have a disease of perception, so what people say and what I hear is not always the same thing. And this is my experience. Okay? I got a sponsor, I got a home group, and I was going to meetings. I was doing 2-3 meetings a day. As a newcomer, I would hear things literally, like seriously literally. People would say, you know, look for God in the bottom of the coffee pot. All right. After the meeting, I'd walk over to the coffee pot and look, and I saw coffee and coffee grounds. And I feel like I'm missing something, you know? Like, if your ass falls off, pick it up, put it in a wheelbarrow, and take it to a meeting. I'm like, my ass is going to fall off? And I'd been going to meetings for, you know, here and there. I'd never seen a wheelbarrow at any of them. Like, you're going to get your marbles back in like 5 years. I'm like, what marbles are they talking about? I never had them. I don't know how to play marbles. Like, I'm confused. What is going on? Now, I started going to the solution group in Barnegat in February. I didn't get sober till December. There's a consistent message of hope in that room. So people were talking about the solution. People were talking, shouting about the power and glory of God. The 12 steps. A program of action. And I just was not done. I was not willing to hear it. So I was untreated for almost a year, pretty much a year on the button in AA. And I know that it was all my fault. I know that now. You know, I want to do what the majority, and the good majority is telling me, you know, just don't drink today and come to a meeting. You know, so if there's a big majority of people saying that and a smaller majority saying something else, I'm like, I'm doing that because that sounds way easier than like that. Because I'm like, where's the win the lottery step? You know, where's the trophy blonde step? You know, that might have got me in a little bit sooner. But I'm still managing my own life at this time. And doing nothing. I was the cookie guy, but I was like a really miserable cookie guy. And I didn't want to talk to you. I was miserable. I hated AA. I used to hate it. Like, the direction I had was like, go to a meeting and call me today. Because I got a sponsor, and I got a home group, and I was going to meetings. You know, all today I know human powers. At the time I didn't know that. And I'm like, call my sponsor, and he's like, how was your day? I was like, it was horrible. It sucked. And I couldn't even ask him how his day was. I'm like, this is it? You know, like, I kind of knew something was, you know, different. But again, people were talking about this, and I wasn't willing to hear it. And pride, and there was a lot of pride and ego, too, because I thought that I knew more than all of you combined. And like right now, like, ego runs rampant. I was joking about it with Dave. Like, I think when I'm done, you're going to give me a standing ovation and carry me out on your shoulders. So, pride and ego almost killed me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Almost killed me. Not able to get out of my own way and maybe think that your idea might be better than mine. You know, I wasn't going to ask another guy for help when I still had an idea left. That was. But I ran out of ideas. And pain was a great motivator for someone like me. And still today, extreme pain and extreme joy are my two biggest motivators. And the pain got great. I got to a place towards the end of December where I had the first thought that I wanted to shoot myself in the head. And I was sober in AA. I hadn't had a drink or a substance in my body in 3 months. And like that thought never came to me when I was out and about. Ever. And I'm like, I kind of knew I was missing something, but I didn't. I didn't know what I didn't know. And God used me as a chess piece, really. And just placed me and opened up my ears. That there was a guy speaking at a meeting who said, if you're in AA and you're not having fun, you're doing something wrong. And I was like, my head exploded. Not literally, guys, or I would not be here. Does anybody know? Well, like, it was... I'm like, that dude, like, I'm having the exact opposite of fun. It was horrible. I hated AA. Oh, it was horrible. And I was doing nothing. I came to your meetings, I smoked your cigarettes, I drank your coffee, and that was it. But I went to a meeting and I didn't drink today. I wanted to every second of every day. Oh, God, did I want to. And God graced me with being a coward. So when I got that thought of ending everything, I drank. Because I knew that would bring me relief. And it did. And my grand sponsor came up from Baltimore. He was sitting down with me. I was detoxing for the umpteenth time. And this is one of those guys with, like, the, you know, the glow and, like, the light on. And that belly laughter, which became so attractive to me when the pain got so great. And I just started to, like, watch this dude. I was fortunate to get to spend the weekend with him. He was staying at my buddy Chris Yax's house in Waretown. And I got to stay there the weekend with my sponsor and Nick's sponsor. And he just started sharing his experience with me. That was really it. You know, and he asked me, like, if I've ever been through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my answer was something like, well, I think, or kind of, or sometimes, some of it, or I go to step meetings, and we do them there, and he kind of looked at me like I had five heads, and he said, how long are you going to be a member of the 12-step program and ignore the 12 steps? Epiphany. Rocket science, right? It's like buying a ticket to a movie and not going in to see the movie. Why would you do that? Is what he said. And I believed this guy, right? And again, at this point, I'd run out of ideas. And I was willing to try anything. And he actually went back to Baltimore, and I got hooked up with Nick. And I asked him for help. And I'm like, dude, yeah, I really don't know what I want to do, if I want to drink, if I want to stay sober, if I want to live or die. I just know I don't want to feel this pain anymore. Like, that's all I know. And he gave me a simple direction to just go read the doctor's opinion and call him. I was done. That was it. And, you know, now my experience up to today, I know some people that do it differently. Again, my experience, some people say go read the first 164, or we'll read the 164 together, yada yada. What's it, 8 pages? Something like that, doctor's opinion. When somebody's brand new, to get them to read 164 pages, 8 pages. Read the doctor's opinion, let's hook up. You know, we can start moving right now. And that's what worked for me. So we hook up, he guarantees me certain things. He says, like, you're going to experience freedom like you've never felt before. I guarantee you that something's going to happen to you, and you're going to know, because you're not going to be able to describe it by anything like human up to this point in your life. When this stuff happens to you, the only thing I ask of you is that you then pass this on. If you can make yourself available to show others what was shown to you, we can move forward. If you can't, go find someone else. Like, that was the only stipulation with him. It was like, I must pass this on. And we started talking about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous for like an hour. And at this point, like, I'm like dying. And I'm like, this history lesson sucks. I don't care about this stuff. Like, I just want to start feeling better, man. Don't you know who I am? You know? And he was pounding home the principle. You know, the idea of one alcoholic sharing with another. That was it. You know, for the sole purpose of recovery. No profit motive. You know, where the real magic happens. He told me that this was going to be vital for me. And at the time, I'm like, whatever. You know? Talked about stories that date back to the 1700s. Talked about the Washingtonians, the Oxford groups, Roland Hazard, Ebbie Thatcher, you know, the whole line, Dr. Young, everything. And today, the history is just it fascinates me. If there's nobody up on it, I would highly suggest getting up on it. And we get done talking about the history, and then we start talking about principles. And he's like, "Do you know what a principle is?" And I really didn't. And at this point, again, the pain, I was able to tell the truth and stuff. And I was like, "No, I have no idea." Instead of being like, "Yeah, I know what it is. It's this," or making something up. Like, why would I do that? And we use the gravity example. If there's anybody who hears it a lot, oh, I'm so sorry, but this is my experience. what's your name, young lady?
Candy.
Candy? Can I call you Candy? All right, Sandy. All right, Sandy and I go up on this roof, right, and jump off. Sandy believes in gravity, and Sandy understands how gravity works, and Sandy wants to hit the ground, right? I, on the other hand, I don't believe in gravity. I definitely don't understand how gravity works. I don't want to hit the ground. You guys agree we'll both hit the ground?
Yeah.
All right. This is a smart room right here. You take a certain action, jumping off the roof, you get a certain result, hitting the ground, whether I believe it, whether I understand it, whether I want to or not. Because gravity is a physical principle of nature. That's what it is. It's a physical principle. So like this guy was putting words like in a ways that I've never heard them before, and I'm like, that makes a whole lot of sense. So he's like, all right, these are spiritual principles. So if we take these same actions honestly and thoroughly, and he believed they were going to work and understood how they worked and wanted them to work. We'll say he doesn't want them to work because I think I would want to. I don't believe they're going to work. I definitely don't understand them or understand how they're going to work. And I definitely want them to work. None of that crap makes a whole lot of difference. If I take this action, I'm going to get this result, whether I believe in it, understand it, whatever. So I'm like, that makes sense to me. You know, like you got to beat stuff into me sometimes. So I'm like, all right, cool. Now, step work, I highly suggest doing it one-on-one with a sponsor. I'm going to share my experience the way I was brought through them, just in a general way. Maybe there's somebody on the fence at 6 or on the fence at 9, and I might be able to say something that can help. But please, the way I was taught is they're meant to go through with your sponsor one-on-one. So we get to one. He asked me a series of questions like, when you put alcohol in, can you tell me with any certainty when you're going to stop? I'm like, well, that's real easy. Absolutely not. You know, there's been many times where I wanted to leave the bar at 10 or only have 6 or only have 24, you know, or whatever the number may be. And, you know, why could my friends leave at 10? And I, you know, because they could. Why could I not leave at 10? Because I couldn't. I have, you know, this physical allergy to alcohol put into my system, triggers this phenomenon of craving. A thirst. I get this thirst that I cannot quench. Made a whole lot of sense. And that actually brought me a little bit of relief. I was like, that's why. Cool. I didn't know why. They said, all right, when you put a drink down, can you tell me with any certainty when you're going to pick it back up? My answer was as soon as possible. That's probably the easiest question you've asked me since I met you. And he started laughing and he said, no, did you maybe have like a bunch of reasons why you shouldn't drink? Whether it be like no job is pretty good. You know, no money is like a real good one. Fist fight with mom is a pretty decent one, I think. And you get this thought upon awakening. I use that from the literature. You get this thought the minute you wake up that's like, well, it's going to be different. You know, I'll be okay. It won't be as bad tonight. You know, maybe I can get to that mark and not go past it tonight. It'll be all right. And this one thought completely destroys all of this. Destroys all of this. I put that one in, physical, off to the races. Allergy kicks in, phenomenal craving, gone. That made sense. So he's like, I got good news and bad news. I'm like, oh boy. He's like, bad news is there's one more part. But the good news is it's the only one we have to treat. So like, I'm not that good at math, but like 1 out of 3 odds seems like better than 3 out of 3. So I'm like, all right, that sounds good. And he talks about the spiritual malady that I have. It's described to me as a restless, irritable, and discontented feeling, and a natural separation from people and from God. And I've come to learn that my biggest problem for me, for this alcoholic, my biggest problem, my whole life was a separation from God. That was it for me. So, now up to this point in AA, I've been going to meetings for over a year, and I had no idea what an alcoholic was, or what alcoholism was. And I was scared to death to tell you I didn't know. Identifying myself as one so you would like me and accept me. I had no idea that there were three parts to my illness. Absolutely no idea. And it's been brought to my attention that if we're going to fix something, first we should be able to identify what that problem is. So I was like, all right, now I know exactly what I'm up against. So now what? What do I do now? And we move forward to step two. My experience was, it's the hope step. Like, was shared with me, like the fact that I reached out for help and was sitting with this guy at the Barnegat Bay showed him that I had some hope that this might work. Done. We can move forward. Step three. Made a decision. It was described to me just that, a decision. And like, I was kind of, this is the one that always got me. Like, I'm like, how can I turn my whole life and my thoughts and actions over to this thing I'd like, maybe like little belief in my whole life? And looking back now, this power is a byproduct of the 12 steps. So if I stop here, I can't get to it. Right? One's the problem, two's the solution, and 3 through 12 are just like precise directions, clear-cut directions on how to acquire that. So, again, sort of got bamboozled here. And he said, you want to make that third step decision, write your fourth step. You know, and your third step isn't final until your pen hits the paper. You know, you guys hear the frog analogy, the three frogs on a rock. One makes a decision to jump off. How many are still on the rock? Three. You know, a decision followed by no action is no result. So if I make this decision and I take no action, I'm going to get no result. So I was given an outline, four pages, one for resentment, one for fear, one for sex conduct, and one page of directions. I was taught to work down in the columns, not across. I was taught to sit my... I was taught to block out hours of my night. Like hours. So I can sit down, write, and not get up till I'm done. Because if I think I can write 10 minutes tonight, and 10 minutes the next night, and 10 minutes the next night, then I'm still delusional and will never finish it. So my direction was to sit down and write my fourth step until I'm done. I'm to go to God and ask for help. And write. Parts were uncomfortable, but I'm going to feel that crap anyway, so I might as well put it on paper. You know? I sat down with my sponsor and God and you know, really got down to the causes and conditions. I found out a few things in five, like A, I was an asshole. And B, my entire life was me thinking about me without God. Up to that point. So we were going to do the best we could to practice the opposite, which would just be me thinking about others with God. Very simple direction. Six and seven, I wanted to breeze over because there are only a couple paragraphs in the book. You know, I'm like, how long can this take? You know, these are my favorite ones. You know, if there's anybody working on yourself in here, please stop. It's not your job, it's God's job. And a story was shared with me that I'd love to share. And Sandy's twin sister, Candy, was speaking at our group Friday night at 8:30. Candy has a problem with procrastination. Sloth. She left a little late. Sandy got the punctual gene. And Candy did call. She's a wonderful woman, by the way. She told me she was running late. She had some traffic. Now, who knows if she left a little earlier, if she would have got to the meeting on time. Irrelevant. She didn't. So we have to have a meeting. So Sandy was meeting Candy. This is going to get confusing. We brought somebody else out from the meeting to speak until Candy got there. All right? Candy gets to the meeting at 9. She was a little late, so we let her speak from 9 to 9:30. About a week later, the woman who spoke for the first half hour was approached by somebody, by a young woman, who said, "I want to thank you. I was at Columbus last week when you were there." And she's thinking, ego like me, "I know I did a great job, you know." And she says, "Thank you for being late, because that woman that spoke first is now my sponsor." So, if God wants to use a defect of mine to directly help one of His kids, that's okay with me. And how arrogant am I to think I know what those defects... I mean, I might have a pretty decent idea after five, but like to really think I know what all of mine are and what can be useful to God and His kids and what can't be useful to God and His kids, who am I to think I know that? You know, it was pretty much pounded into me. You know, and the textbook says we can ask for this willingness. We can pray for this willingness if we don't have it. You know, I was taught very early I'll find God through my feet, nowhere else. This is a program of action. And that if I really want to get to know God, I'll get to know His kids. So we get to 8. I had my list from my 4-step. I threw on a couple people, actually more than a couple on the bottom, that I wasn't resentful towards. You know, most of those were probably financial that I threw on the bottom, but there was some like, you know, my cousin just not being a cousin. You know, he never did anything to me. I just was absent from his life. You know, so I threw on a bunch of people at the bottom, and like the words "all in all" were stressed to me, and "direct" was stressed to me. Like, unless I've harmed somebody over the internet or via text message or via letter, I'm to go back and make direct amends. And like, I used to call, like, the first couple were kind of cool, and like, I'm gonna share two experiences. I would call and be like, "I really don't want to do this," and he's like, "It's not about you, dude." How free do you want to be? What he would say. And I was starting to get results just because I was doing it. I had no understanding or belief that this crap was going to work. And I didn't understand. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I was just doing, I was taking direction for the first time in my life, trying something else out because I had no ideas left. And I started feeling way better. It still blows me away to this day. So, one, I went back to a bar that I used to work at and stole from for 4 years. And I told the GM, I'm like, "Look, I stole from you for 4 years. Like, I offer, like, what can I do to make this right? This is where I feel I've harmed you. Anybody that I can approach, amends are 5% of what I say, 95% of what I do after that anyway. So, like, you know, this is where I feel I've harmed you. What can I do to make it right? Don't want to be that guy anymore. And then if I want to be free, I do what he says, or they say, or he or she. I give them the floor. I blacked out a lot. Is there anything I missed? You know, if you can't think of anything, if something comes to you in a month, 6 months, 2 years, please call me. Let me know. I'm going to go back and put myself in a position to be as helpful to this person from this point forward. So I'm like, "All right. I stole from you for 4 years. What can I do to make it right?" He's like, "You don't work here anymore. Let bygones be bygones." I'm like, "Can I come?" I'm trying to like brainstorm ideas. He told me to want anything, but I'm like, "Can I come and like offer like free work? I'll do like prep for you or something." He's like, "No, I don't want anything." He's like, "I just want you to come in every few months and let me know that you're still doing what you're doing." So every few months, I make sure that I go back, still do, let him know that I'm still doing what I'm doing. And Christmas last year, anytime there's a holiday around us, I go in and I buy a bunch of gift cards and I try to put money back in. Money back into the universe. Money back into where I stole from. And he didn't even tell me he wanted to do that. That I needed to do that. But as I do this stuff, I get a little bit more free. And my best amends was with my sister. I had a whole bunch of like people patting me on the back and telling me, like, "You're doing such a great job. We're so proud of you." I'm like, "Yeah, it's all fine and dandy." But she was like, I think you're full of shit. I don't believe you." I was like, "All right." 4 or 5 months later, she called me and asked me if I would come, because I was the last person that she tried. If I would drive up to Boston and help her move back to New Jersey. So I went. I told her if she ever needed anything to call me. And then I showed up. I was in her wedding like 4 months ago, and last week she invited me to go to the doctor with her to see the sex of her baby. She's pregnant. I'm gonna have a niece. Like, this is the girl that I didn't talk to for 3 years. Like, that's not way to go, Ryan. That's way to go, Alcoholics Anonymous. Way to go, God. 10, 11, and 12, people talk about daily maintenance. For me, I can't maintain a relationship with God. It has to be constantly growing. I have to be seeking this power I choose to call God. If, like, spiritual progress and growth for me was taught, like, it's walking up a down escalator. So if I stop moving my feet, I'm going to be going down. And to be consistent with what I do. The 4 and 4, the directions are right in the book. You know, continue to watch for resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, fear. You know, when this crops up, not if, so it tells me that it will. It gives me 4 things to do. Talk to someone immediately, go to God immediately, make amends if necessary, turn my thoughts to who I can help. Inside or outside of AA, it's irrelevant. I try to nudge every single person I come into contact with towards God. 11, I follow straight out of the book. You know, get on my knees in the morning, at night. Try to keep this channel open throughout the day. Stop when I face indecision, you know. Show me what I can do for the man who is still sick. The whole nine, you know, at night I can retire. Before I retire, constructively review my day, then I pack all I could into the mainstream of life. That's usually no. Was I thinking about me most of the time? That's usually yes. Still, I fall short every single day. But when I'm on with, like, sitting quiet, because, like, I can't do that. Like, I struggle. I struggled with that. I used to not do it, and I used to ask people in meetings what they do. My sponsor said, ask people. Maybe they'll have an idea for you. Use the room. See what other people do. You know? I just sit quietly. When I'm on with that, just trying to listen for some sort of direction or answer, I'm at the most peace. And my days are the best. And my heart's filled with the most joy. And the 12 step, you know, like, doing stuff like this and trying to help guys. You know, fellowship, the promises in our book, a fellowship that we crave will grow up around us. You know, there's a pocket of enthusiasm. Oh yeah, September 10th, our 1 year anniversary. Columbus, Timmy H. from Boston, speaking. 6 o'clock, burgers and dogs, outside. All right, had to plug that. You know, anybody can sound okay for an hour at a meeting. I have very many manipulative genes in my body. What am I doing outside of AA? You know, the book says a better display will come in our homes, occupations, and affairs. You know, am I bringing these principles everywhere I go? Am I nudging people towards God? Which is like the direction I was given very, very early. And again, I fall short all the time. But my grand sponsor also says, like, this may be a delusion that I'm living, but if it is, it's the greatest delusion I've ever lived in my entire life. You know? I run a sober house. It's the greatest show on earth. I want to YouTube it. We started it about last March. It's a blast. Not a glum lot. Alcoholics Anonymous, greatest show on earth. And we have a blast, you know? I'm an energy efficiency auditor, Obama stimulus. Let us save you money on your energy bills. Let us save you money. This kind of just started falling at my feet when I started taking those actions. It's crazy. You know, the third step promise, draw close to this power, perform his work well, which I don't think I do. And he'll give me everything I need. You know, somehow bills are getting paid. There's gas in the car, food on the table. And I have a blast inside and outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're very corny, our crew. We laugh a lot. And I've never had as much fun in my entire life. This all happened to me as a result of taking action that I was thoroughly convinced would not work. That's my experience.
The greatest gift I've probably been given is my parents renewed their vows for 30 years. And I've got to walk my mother down the aisle and be the best man for my dad. And it was just... I mean, words can't... In the English language, I can't tell what that means to them. You know, it's not about me. So, there's anybody, like, hanging in there or... You know, just trying to get another day sober. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, there's people I know in this room that would be more than happy to help you. And that actually can help you. So, I think that's it. But I want to thank the group for having me again. Such an honor. Anytime I'm invited somewhere, blows me away. And thank you so much for letting me share.